Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, episode 33, One Reviewer's Opinion. This episode is brought to you by Carbonite. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial, plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com, offer code theater. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here with UltimateAVMag.com and HomeTheaterMag.com. Before I introduce today's guest geek, I wanted to let you know about a sweepstakes we're running on UltimateAVMag.com. Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, is just now coming out on Blu-ray as separate editions. And to celebrate this momentous event, we're running a sweepstakes on UAV to win a copy of all three movies on Blu-ray, in addition to a prize package of exclusive swag. So go to UltimateAVMag.com. If you're not already registered, create an account and leave a comment on the blog at the top of the homepage, and you'll be entered to win the sweepstakes, which will be the drawing will take place on October 1st, so you have the rest of the month to do that. But I just wanted to make sure you knew about that, and please do enter, and good luck to everyone. So this week's guest geek is Fred Mantagian, AV raconteur and contributing editor for Home Theater Magazine. Hey, Fred, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Great to be on. Great to be a geek.
Thank you. Glad to have you with me, as always. You're one of the most entertaining AV geeks I know, so we should have a fun time today.
Yeah, well, my mother never taught me how to shut up. So
this is clearly the best situation for a podcast. Makes my job very easy. Those who are tuned in to the live video stream at live.twit.tv or on into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Fred, and I'll pass along as many as I can. But I'd like to start with, Fred, with you telling us about your reference system. You're primarily a reviewer for home theater, and so clearly you must have a pretty kick-ass home theater system. What do you got there?
I do. I have a very nice system. I actually have kind of like two systems, really, speaker-wise. My original primary system was a Martin Logan system, which I absolutely loved and still use it when I get a chance. But right now I've been using a Revel system, which I also absolutely love. It's very different going from electrostatic speakers that are dipoles to point speakers, direct speakers, dynamic speakers. But very enjoyable. The one thing you kind of miss with electrostatics is the imaging. It's different, it's deeper, it's wider, but it's not really pinpoint. And you can play with the Revels, which are dynamic speakers, and really tune it in nicely. As far as electronics go, I have it seems to be the AVR du jour. Although I just did spend a couple months with a really amazing separate system from Class A, which will be the review is going to be published, I think, in the October issue of Home Theater Magazine, and that was an absolutely amazing system.
Now, by separates, let's make sure everybody understands.
Let me explain. It's a separate preamp processor, multi-channel preamp processor, and a separate amplifier. Basically, two of the most important parts of an AVR pulled apart so that they can have their own power supplies and get the proper electrical treatment they need for each of their situations.
Mm-hmm.
So... But right now, my reference system is actually being driven by a Marantz SR8002 receiver, which is a very modest receiver. I think it's about a $2,000 receiver. Mm-hmm. And even though the folks at Revel would probably prefer I use a $10,000 amplifier to drive their speakers, it seems to do a decent job.
Now, the Revels are pretty efficient, are they?
No, they're not. They're They're tough speakers to drive, but the Marantz doesn't seem to have a problem. Now, some of the problems that you used to run into like years ago, and I won't name any manufacturers, but like really big name manufacturers would come out with these multi-channel amps, and they were unable to drive what at the time was my speaker, the Martin Logan's. I'm sorry, the MagnaPan speakers. Mm-hmm. Those do have a... My wife's there. Hello. I'm sorry. those do have a very low impedance, but they would just literally shut off. And one thing I found out with a lot of the AVRs that are out now, they've really gotten better on the electronics, whether they're going to the Class D type amplification, which has improved tremendously, or they've just gotten better at making Class AB amplification. But these new AVRs are just absolutely amazing, the amount of power that they can put out. I just put one in a box and sent it back today to El Segundo, Scott, that had 145 watts per channel. And believe me, it really did have 145 watts per channel and had absolutely no problems.
El Segundo, of course, is the home base of Home Theater Magazine and where we do all of our audio testing. So we shall see when Mark Peterson actually does the the audio measurements if it really does output 145 watts. I found it very interesting that some manufacturers claim a certain power output, and it really does end up being that close to that power output when it's measured by an independent person such as Mark for us, while others don't. And in some cases, outputting five channels, you get close to the stated power, but then seven channels, it drops dramatically. Are you driving five or seven channels?
I'm actually driving five. This particular receiver is from Onkyo. It's actually an 11.2.
Oh,
or as Amazon.com calls it, a 9.2. But
how does that work?
They can't add. I just think they were probably incredulous that anybody would go with 11.2. They've actually added, and unfortunately I couldn't test this, but they've actually added, I think it's called wide speakers, which would go to the left and to the right, or the outside of the main speakers in the front, and then high speakers, which would mount on the ceiling above it. And they actually use, there's actually a decoding method in there from Odyssey that's supposed to add height. Now, how well that works, I don't know. Maybe they look for anything that goes from the front channel to the back and assume it's flying overhead. And they do it that way. But it's really interesting. I couldn't test that. I hope somebody does test that and sees how it is. But, you know, I really couldn't scrape up the funds for some more rebels to hang on the ceiling.
I have heard Odyssey. The processing you're referring to is called DSX.
They do
allow what are called wide speakers, which are placed outside of the angle of the main front left and right at about 60 degrees plus or minus from center, and then these height channels as well. And I have heard it, and I was surprised at how good it worked. We watched a piece of WALL-E, and there's a scene that they showed us where WALL-E is rolling along, and he rolls up a ramp to the right, and you could actually hear his rolling sound go up and go into the height speakers, which was I was very impressed with that.
Wow, that's really neat.
Yeah,
I don't know how they do it, but I don't doubt that they can figure a way around it. They're superb engineers at Odyssey, I assume.
Yes, I believe so. And yet this does get to a question that I wanted to ask you, which has to do with another thing that Odyssey does, which is auto room correction or auto room EQ. And I know you've got some pretty strong opinions about that. Why don't you lay it on me, baby?
Okay. Well, like everybody else, I was very hopeful at first, but, you know, how well room EQ could work. I mean, there's certainly enough processing power built into the receivers now. I mean, they're basically computers with amplifiers attached. But what I found in this most recent implementation, and I honestly don't know if it's a different version or whatnot, but the way it's implemented in this particular receiver, it actually sounded terrible when it was in play. And not really subtly terrible either. It just sounded very phasey. It didn't sound like anything was defective in the system. It just sounded like it read the room wrong, and I measured the room twice. And I think a lot of it has to do, and this is pure conjecture, in the fact that you know, they have all this all these algorithms and all this processing, but then they're using a little microphone, which I don't have it here, but we have video here. It's about this high, and it weighs about as much as a bulimic hummingbird. So, you know, it's not very good as far as it presenting itself as having any quality. Now, I'm sure Odyssey spent a lot of time looking at this and determined that while it might not be an AKG, 414, it's certainly adequate for doing the job. Problem is, maybe it's adequate for doing the job in a rectangular room where these things are probably tested. Mm-hmm. But in my room, which you can't see, but it's a big L-shaped room. It's maybe 29 foot. The back half of the room is 29 foot. The front half is 22. The ceiling goes from 8 foot down to 7 foot at one spot. So, and I have, a lot of reflections and a lot of absorbed material. And I just think it just doesn't get a good measure from it. And I don't think my room is that atypical of a lot of rooms. A lot of people, if they don't have an L-shaped room, they have a big opening that goes into a dining room or a kitchen, things like that. And these are just real-world conditions, the type of things you would expect in somebody buying a system that's going to fit, a budget of $2,000 or something like that. So I didn't like it. And I've always, every time I've had Odyssey, I've turned it off. Now, having said that, I also use the Pioneer system, which is, I'm going to forget the name of it, MCACC, I think it is.
Correct.
Right. And don't ask me what it stands for. And
I'm afraid I don't remember either.
Yeah. But
it's multi-channel acoustic correction something or another, I think.
Wow. Okay. And then that comes down, you win $100. It worked very well. And to the point where I left it on. I thought my room sounded a little better with it on than off. So these things can work, and Odyssey certainly has made a name for themselves, and they've done a really great job getting into almost everybody's box, with a few exceptions. And unfortunately, I find the exception, like Pioneer, better than Odyssey. So
I know Yamaha has their own system as well. Have you ever tried that one?
I did, and my recollection right now is that I don't remember. I don't remember.
I don't remember. That's good. Yeah. So, right. Okay.
But,
generally speaking, would you say that even in the best case, the Pioneer, say, would you prefer to do your own setup manually? Or you said in the case of Pioneer, you were happy to leave it as Pioneer did it. But in the case of Odyssey, you weren't. So in the case of Odyssey, did you go back in and like tweak the levels and EQ and so on yourself?
No. It sounded better off, so I left it off. Now, granted, I'm familiar with my room, but most people are familiar with the sound of their room. Mm-hmm. And they tend to like it, or they tweak their speakers, without benefit of room correction. They tweak their speakers in the positioning, or they should, to get the best sound they can before room EQ. Plus, people have limitations. Like, I have a lot of room, it seems, but still, there's only so many places I can put the speaker. You know, if I want to put my right speaker a little more to the right, it's going to run into a subwoofer. So I'd have to move that. So now the sound becomes a little too wide. So, people are, I think, better off without the EQ on, get the best sound you can, then turn it on and see if you like it. And if it works, great. But I would always go with the best initial sound that you can get without room EQ, because that's basically you're equalizing the room yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Do you use acoustic treatments at all in your room?
Kids, they absorb a lot of stuff. They have organic matter.
Hey, you stand over there.
They're big. They're adults now, so actually they absorb quite a bit. No, I don't really do anything acoustically. This is my family room here, and so it's shared. I have a desk in here, a couple of leather sofas and chairs, and some very heavy oriental rugs. I have a wall, that wall behind the, I don't know if you can tell, it's a brick wall that runs the whole like 28 foot deep of the room. And that, yes, it's hard, but it's also very irregular surface. So it breaks it up a lot. I have vinyl records on another wall, and they seem to absorb a lot of things too. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't do anything special in here. I'm sure there's manufacturers that wish I would, but it's just the way it is.
Right. What was the Onkyo receiver that you just finished reviewing?
It's the model TXNR5008.
And that's in the, again, in the like the $2,000 range, or?
It's $2,600, I believe.
Okay.
$2,599.
It's a little bit on the upper end of things as far as receivers go.
Yeah, it is. But I think, you know, Denon and Yamaha, they still make flagships that are in the $4,000 to $5,000 range, right?
Yeah, they do. That's correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is more in competition with the Pioneer. And it's interesting. I didn't want to get a lot into the review comparing Pioneer. Because, I mean, manufacturers, you know, they appreciate you being honest. They don't like you talking about their competitors so much in their review. But, yeah. I mean, I think it's competing against the $400 less expensive receiver, which is the Pioneer. And the Pioneer,
Is it the SC27?
27, yes.
Yeah.
Really great unit. Loved it. Loved the room correction on it. It had some modes if you were using and I don't remember the model number, but the Pioneer Blu-ray player, where it basically had de-jittering synchronization between mm-hmm. the clocks on the receiver and on the player.
Gotcha.
And I really like that model. So, but you know what? The Onkyo brings you so many other things that the Pioneer didn't have, like internet radio. And it's a really amazing implementation of internet radio and iPod control on the Onkyo. For instance, like a lot of earlier AVRs, you used to have to buy as a docking station separate, you know, to run your iPod. This thing has just a USB connection in the front. You plug it in, and it just doesn't play what's playing. It brings the menu up, so you can search and do everything you want to do as if you were holding the iPod.
Cool. And you control it then from the receiver's remote?
Correct. You do. I mean, it mm-hmm. has the one limitation of if your favorite band is ZZ Top and you're going by artist, it's going to take you a long time because they don't have anything that's equivalent to the whirly wheel, and they don't have anything that senses that you're pressing, holding down the down button and want to go fast. So you literally be clicking forever.
You know?
Yeah,
well, that's
so
that
part's no good. Get up and just move over to the iPod, throw one ZZ Top and go on your way. But it also has a great internet implementation on that, which includes Pandora and Slacker, two free products that anybody can sign up for. And they work really great. And
Pandora is internet radio. Is Slacker the same?
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. Pandora is a little different in that you name a band, you get a station. In Slacker, you name a genre and you get music in that genre. So if you pick hip hop, you get all kinds of hip hop.
Mm.
So it's a little different. And it, depending on the mood you're in, is depending on what you want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if I really want Coldplay, I will go to Pandora and put on my Coldplay station. But if I just want alternate rock, then I'll go put an alternate rock station on Slacker. So it was a really good implementation. They also have interface for Cirrus and Rhapsody, both of which I believe are paid subscriptions.
Right.
So
right.
Along to that, you can get that too over the internet.
I've always liked Onkyo's receivers. I've always thought they did a great job. The only problem with the earlier, less expensive ones, like the 605, 606, 607, 607, I think solved the problem, was that they did some weird things in the video domain. And I'm sure you check some. I should check something out along the video path as well, right?
Oh boy, you caught me with my shorts down. No, I don't. I don't do anything with video. I let California take care of the video and testing that.
Tom Norton is the guy who does most of that.
Yeah,
that's true.
Tom is great. Did you see today's website picture on Home Theater, by the way? Tom calibrating some Megabucks 3D projector.
Oh, yes. That's on Ultimate AV as well.
It's a great photo of him.
Yeah, it's a great photo of him.
He's so into it. But, Tom will do that. I fess up in the review, actually, and I say, you know, it's been a couple of years since I've had anything that wasn't HDMI in my system.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, everything comes in at 1080 I or P, and it goes out at 1080 I or P. And my display takes care of that. My displays take care of that.
Right. Speaking of which, what display devices do you use?
Okay, I have a amazing, I can't believe they went out of business, Pioneer Elite Kuro 60-inch.
60-inch,
it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I can watch movies on it and enjoy them, and I don't feel the urge to drop the screen, but if I have company, then I'll drop the screen, and we'll watch a movie. I have a JVC, I can't remember the model number, HD1 something, RS1 or HD1, something like that. And it's a, it's a full HD 1920-1080p DILA projector, and it was the first generation of the new generation, if you know what I mean. And it's still today, from all the reviews I read, still does a few things better than any of the newer ones. The contrast is really good, and it's just a great picture. I hadn't watched it in a couple months, actually, when I reviewed the piece from Class A, the pieces from Class A. And I went out and I bought Avatar, and I was thoroughly amazed at how great that thing looked.
You watched that on your JVC projector?
I watched it on the JVC, and I was just totally blown away.
What screen do you have?
I have a Studio Tech 130, which is a 1.3 reflectivity. It's the one we all used to use when we had CRTs. And it still works great, except for a couple of dead ladybug stains on it. Oh, you know what? They go to sleep when you roll it up, and you don't know they're there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a shame. I feel bad.
Yeah, well, got to get somebody out there to clean that, because that would bug the hell out of me, so to speak. So, listen, what about reference titles? You just mentioned Avatar, and that is certainly a great reference title to use for video and probably audio as well.
Right.
What else do you use? What are your favorite titles to use for testing? In any format, Blu-ray, DVD, CD, SACD, whatever.
Well, I'm sure I can't remember all of them. I kind of walk up to what you see behind me and pick something out, although I kind of go right to the Blu-ray section now. Mostly what you see back there is DVD. But I like this movie Seven for the sound, for the video. It's very good. Slevin.
Because there is a movie called Seven as well, which just got reviewed on the review got posted on UAV today, in fact.
Oh, David?
Yeah, David by David Vaughn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love Seven, and I use that a lot. Even though I only have it on an original DVD, I thought the sound was amazing on it.
Yeah.
It was so layered. Everything was really layered, and I just admired the work that went into that, coming up with that soundtrack. Yeah, Seven is good. Slevin is in your face. It's an action movie along the lines of something that Mr. Madonna would put out. But it's a good movie. It's a good movie. And some of the other things, a really great movie is nobody saw it. Jeff Bridges did this bit of a movie where he was a country singer with a drinking problem, and he was working and he was trying to do a comeback, I guess. And
That was recent. What was the name of that movie?
It's called Crazy Heart.
Yeah. It got an Academy Award nomination, I think, didn't it?
But still, no one saw it. Definitely worth seeing. I mean, it's a great movie. If you like music, you'll be blown away. If you play guitar, you'll love it because the Telecasters and the Stratocasters, they all sound like Telecasters and Stratocasters. They did a really great job with that.
Being a guitar player, know that what those instruments sound like.
That's right. And they were very authentic sounding. I doubt that what we saw them playing was actually what we heard playing in the movie. I'm sure it was worked on in the studio. But Jeff Bridges was actually singing all the songs.
And he wrote quite a few of them too, I think.
I don't know that. I didn't look into it that much, but I know he did sing the songs. And I know Colin Firth actually, what's his name? British guy. No, Scottish guy.
I can't remember.
Colin Farrell.
That's it.
Yeah, Colin Farrell also was in the movie, plays a Texan and sings, and he was really good too. So it's good. It's not like Leonard Nimoy sings. Okay, these guys. Yeah, we're not watching it just for the novelty.
It was a great William movie. Shatner.
Right. Yeah, he was a great movie. Great soundtrack. Gyllenhaal's in it, and she's amazing, Maggie Gyllenhaal. It was a really good movie.
Mm-hmm. Do you listen to SACD or DVD audio much, multi-channel audio?
I don't really have a way to listen to SACD anymore, sorry to say.
You don't have an Oppo player?
I don't, no. I don't. For Blu-ray, I use my PS3, which is the fastest gun in the West, though.
Yeah, an excellent choice. An excellent choice. Yeah.
And even splurged on the remote. So that I wouldn't keep
good.
Bumping into the remote control and going to the next chapter.
right, exactly.
Yes, and that I also still have a Toshiba. I don't remember the model number, but it was like the third generation HD DVD player. I use that. It's great. It is better for watching regular DVDs up converted than the PS3 is. The PS3 the PS3 does an okay job, but. The HD DVD player does a much better job of up converting to 1080p, and
that's great.
So that's what I use. And I use it as a transport for all my music because it sounds really great, you know, as a transport.
So all of you out there with HD DVD players who are maybe kicking yourself for backing the wrong horse, maybe you didn't back the wrong horse. Keep on, hang on to that HD DVD player and watch your DVDs on it because they'll up convert better. I have had the same experience, so I would have to agree with you.
Right. Yep. And it's like the old days. Remember when Theta made a laser disc player and used it as a CD transport?
Was it a good CD transport?
It was. Yeah, I guess it was a great CD transport because, I mean, when you consider you probably had it hooked into a Theta DAC, separate DAC too. So the whole combination, they used to make some really great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen Apocalypse Now? Is that even out on Blu-ray at this point?
I don't know if it's out on Blu-ray.
We've had a question who asked if Apocalypse Now would make a good reference disc. I haven't seen it, so I couldn't say.
I don't know. I mean, it depends what your idea of a reference is. I've got a feeling it's probably not that pure. But
it is now, 30 years old?
It is. It is 30 years old. So it's probably not that pure, but I wouldn't discount it just because of that. I mean, if you love a movie, then, you know, it should be a reference for you anyway. And it certainly can't be worse. The exception is probably the, was it The Last Emperor? Oh, God. That was terrible. They did.
Well,
and
certainly,
every time they tried to make it better, it got worse.
Yeah, the original Fifth Element Blu-ray was pretty awful, as was House of Flying Daggers.
Well, on several levels. But, Apocalypse Now, if nothing but... If for no other reason but to see somebody surfing down the Pyeongpam River, you know, listening to the Rolling Stones.
It's definitely worth checking out for that reason alone.
Just that alone, yeah. That's a good choice. Old movies, like, I don't know if, like, Live and Let Die is out on Blu-ray yet, but, I mean, that was not particularly great looking on DVD, certainly better than Laserdisc. Mm-hmm. And I have both, but I would definitely buy it again on Blu-ray if it came out, just because the movie is so great.
Right. I do agree with that. What about, have you had much chance to look at online content coming in, movies from Netflix or whatever, coming online? And how, if so, how would you compare that with physical media, like Blu-ray discs?
I don't have online Netflix. I don't have a way to play it. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think I would watch it. I mean, I would do online. I would do Netflix through the mail, but, you know, streaming doesn't impress me at all. I haven't seen any streaming that I like yet. So,
yeah, got a question from the chat room here. How do you work the mix and match of different brands for speakers, front, center, surround, or are all your speakers a single brand with the five channels? I think they're all Revels, right?
They are. It's a good question, and it's what I like to call a real world question, because, you know, not everybody can go out and get all five speakers immediately. So, I mean, I get the you really do want to get them from not only from the same manufacturer, but you want to get make sure that they're in the same line. And and you should spend some time just analyzing the speakers, because in spite of what the manufacturer will say, if he has an 8-inch driver in the center channel and an 8-inch driver in the left and right speaker, then the mid-range is a match. If they tell you that, you know, it's the same line, but now it's a 5-inch speaker in the mid-range, you know, and look
around.
In
the center, you
mean? In the center, yeah. If he's got two center channel speakers and one of them, the woofer or the mid-range matches the ones in the main speakers, I would just go with that. Because it is timbrally, it's going to be a match.
And this is what's most important about surround speakers, is to get a timbral match. Every speaker has a tone color, a characteristic, if you will, a timbral characteristic. And so you really want to match that across the front, at least, if not with the surrounds as well, so that pans and so on sound smooth and seamless.
Right, right. Sorry about the phone.
Isn't that a lovely sound?
Yeah. Okay, four rings. Which, and then after that, it'll only ring twice.
Right, okay. Which line of the Revels do you have?
I have the Ultima 2, and in the front I have the Salon 2, which is their bigger, the big bad boys.
Uh-huh.
And in the back I have the Gem 2.
Yep.
Which are smaller speakers, and they have their own stands. And the center is, oh boy, I can't remember the name of the center speaker. They only make one, and it's significant. It's a very expensive system. So you would expect it to be almost like a full range speaker, and it really is. It's like a full range speaker, the center channel.
Actually, the ultimate system, I don't think has a subwoofer yet. They have announced one, but it hasn't shipped yet. Are you using a sub?
You're right. They don't have a sub that's in that line. So I'm using their, oh boy, I can't remember the model number, but they're 15-inch subs, and it's you know, it's their top sub, and it's a great sub, and it has all kinds of controls in the back, which I said originally and have left it the way it is. It sounds very good. Sounds very good.
Right. Well,
and I'm using two of them.
I'm using two of them.
I'm using two of them. The manufacturer wanted me to use two of them, and I did. And so I have them, one in the corner where it really puts out a lot, and then one along the sidewall which is kind of used to fill in where the nulls are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So we played with that quite a bit. And it's not perfect. I mean, I still have room nodes. You have to live with that. But we did the best we could. It certainly sounds awesome.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, and I think it's important to reiterate, where you place the speakers, and in particular the subs, but the mains as well, really has a big impact on the sound that you're going to end up hearing. So spending the time to place the subs where they need to be in order to minimize those room modes is a real important thing.
Right. I agree.
And did you do the subwoofer crawl to find those best places?
Now, one thing you're supposed to do, which is nuts, put the subwoofer where you sit. Well, I'd have to buy a new couch if I put that Revel subwoofer where I sat.
Because it's about 200 or 300 pounds.
The thing weighs so much. But, I mean, technically, that's what you're supposed to do. I guess I could have put it in the floor in front of it and walked around. But, you know, I spent a day with a representative from Revel setting these things up, and it did take a whole day to set up the room. So we tried a few things, and this is kind of where we ended up with.
Mm-hmm. So did you put the main speakers out in the room? They're not right up against the wall, are they?
No, well, they're not. They're, again, I'm looking at my system. Sorry. It's a real world room. So I couldn't bring them out too far. Otherwise they would just pierce huge holes in my Oriental rug. So the backs of the speakers are maybe a foot away from the wall. Having said that, the speaker's 2 foot deep, so the baffle's 3 foot out into the room, which is exactly where I had my Martin Logans, exactly where I had my Magna Pans. It leaves just enough room in the back so that you don't get early rear wall reflections hitting you and confusing the sound. You still get good imaging.
Yep. Right. Okay, well, we've got another question from the chat room, but before we get to that, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Of course, unexpected computer disasters happen all the time. Hard disks crash, you get viruses. That's if you're not being careful. And even if you are, hard disks are going to crash. And the result? You lose all that important data. Those pictures that are irreplaceable, financial records, all kinds of stuff. Music that you'd have to replace would take forever. That's why I recommend backing up with Carbonite. Safe, easy, automatic backup for your PC or Mac. Carbonite helps you protect all the valuable files on your computer and effortlessly. It's safe. Your files are encrypted before they leave your computer, so no one can check them out en route. And it's easy to use, whether you're a computer novice or a full-fledged geek, because it's automatic. Carbonite backs up your files automatically whenever you're connected to the internet. And you can get your files back with just a few clicks. So what could be easier? Your files are backed up off-site, and you can access them from any computer or even your iPhone or BlackBerry now. They have apps for that as well. Free apps, for that matter. So wherever you are and you need those files, you can get them. So if you back it up, you can get it back wherever you are with Carbonite. Now, Carbonite's offering, making a special offer for listeners of Home Theater Geeks. Unlimited backup for your PC or Mac is only $55 a year, which is just 15 cents a day. And you can try it for free. Go to Carbonite.com and enter the offer code THEATER. That's THEATER spelled E-R. American English, not British English. If you decide to buy the service after the trial, you can get 2 months free with the offer code TWIT. So two levels of free offer here. Be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage to get 2 months free. No credit card is required for the free trial. Just go to carbonite.com, offer code THEATER. Okay, back we are with Fred Mantagian. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Scott.
My pleasure. Let's see. Here's a question from the chat room. What is your opinion on Denon AV receivers, especially the new ones that support 3D? I was going to ask you about 3D, but before we get to that, what has your experience been with Denon AV receivers?
I've had great experience with Denon receivers. I haven't had one in the past probably 2 years, though. So anything I know is about some of the older products, but mm-hmm. I will say, like, the what I remember is the sound of the amplification was very good. They're like Marantz. They're slightly on the warmer side of things, which is really nice. And if I had to say, you know, Onkyo is a little has tremendous resolution, but it's definitely not as forgiving. So I think the Marantz and the Denons are a little better geared towards making everything sound, you know, pretty good, which mm-hmm. is nice. There's nothing wrong with that. And as far as the quality of all the features that they have, the quality of how it's built and the features, you know, they're definitely at the top of the game. They're one of the best manufacturers out there. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the big manufacturers are Denon, Marantz, Onkyo, Yamaha, and mm-hmm. Pioneer. Mm-hmm. I mean, did I miss any, Scott?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Nobody's making junk anymore, at least not the flagship level. Everybody's product is really, really good. You mm-hmm. mentioned that video was an issue when we started talking about this, and you're right. You said, I believe you said with the Onkyo, you know, you yeah. weren't really happy with the way they were treating the video.
Right, and I think the most recent models, the 608 anyway, which is a more of an entry level than the one you were looking at, and the 607 before it had solved that problem, and right. now they're doing pretty good. And I think a lot of receivers did that. In particular, they did something called clipping above white and below black, and right. This is not a good thing to do, and now they don't do it anymore, so I feel much more confident recommending them. Denon, I don't think, ever did that. I'm not 100% sure. I'll have to go back and look. But I do agree that Denon receivers are really quite excellent in general. And now they, along with Onkyo and Yamaha, Avantage is their new line. Pioneer, I don't think, is there quite yet. But a lot of them are now passing 3D information. And I was going to ask you if you had much experience. Have you seen much 3D, at least in commercial cinema?
All right. The last 3D movie that I've seen was called Roller Coasters. It came with red and blue glasses.
Oh, no.
And I ended up selling it to somebody on eBay in Germany for $30. So
was it on DVD?
Huh? Yeah, it was on DVD. Yeah, I have not seen one 3D movie out there.
Why not? Why actually, didn't go see Avatar?
No, I didn't. You know, I didn't even see Avatar at the movies. I just didn't get around to going to it. You know, I'm the kind of guy that if I can't see it the week it comes out, I don't want to go see it later. So I'll wait till it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray.
And well, it's just now coming back out with a extended cut, a director's cut or something. So you do have another opportunity to go see it.
I do, and I probably should go see it. A friend of mine went and saw it recently, and he said it was amazing in 3D. It was really great to see.
It is amazing. It looked
3D on my screen, okay? And I can just imagine what it would look like with the actual glasses and everything. So yeah. I have no opinion on 3D other than, you know, I'm out there with everybody else. I'm going to wait and see what happens. It doesn't, you know, maybe if I go see it, I'll become a convert. But right now, it's nothing I'm really that interested in.
Got another question from the chat room that you mentioned improvements in power amplification over the last decade. Have loudspeakers in general made similar improvements?
No. there were bad speakers 20 years ago, and there's bad speaker being made right now while we're on the phone. Speakers, yeah, they're subjective. There's a lot of science to them.
But there's also a lot of voodoo to them.
There's a lot of voodoo. Is that what you said?
That's what I said. Yeah,
you're right. There is a lot of voodoo. I mean, Scott, we were both there in the days when you know we would go to New York City at the shows and we'd go into these huge rooms and they'd dim the lights and light the candles and tell you a story. And then put on two channels of somebody you didn't really want to hear, but it did sound really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people have today's consumers are really that interested. We've lost a lot of that. Even with audiophiles, everybody's tampering with or playing with video right now, and getting interested in that as well. You know, the best speaker manufacturers are still making great speakers. B&W, Revel, Martin Logan, Magnapan, definitely Magnapan, at least most underrated two-channel company out there, even though they do make home theater stuff too. But just for two-channel, they're amazing. There are a lot of great companies out there. But there's a lot of companies that have different lines where some of the stuff is really good and some of the stuff isn't. So they're building towards a price point, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even Onkyo, they had these systems for $1,000. You got a receiver and like 7.1 channels of speakers.
Well, yeah, home theater in a box kind of thing.
Right. How good can they be, you know?
If you evaluate them, you don't do much in the way of reviews of these home theater in a box systems, right?
No, I don't. And I know they meet a target market. I was being a little harsh when I said that.
Yeah, because in context, if you look at the range of home theater in a box type systems, which Mark Fleischman tends to review more than for the most part for home theater, right. I think Onkyo comes out close to on top, generally speaking, within that sphere. Now, when you compare that sphere to, you know, higher end speakers, higher end receivers, such as the stuff you tend to review, then yeah, they might not fare so well. But you have to give them a little credit, at least within their own sphere.
I'm a snob. You caught me. You know? What can I tell you? I'm not going to listen to it. I'd rather listen to the TV quiet than bad speakers loud. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. Do you think
I'm not saying that they're bad.
Yeah. What do you think about the now the ubiquity of highly compressed music, MP3s on iPods? Has that affected consumer perception of quality audio?
That's a really interesting question because you would think that I would hate MP3. Well,
I would think so, yes.
I do kind of hate MP3, but I kind of like AAC. And it's probably because I run it at 320, which is the max that I can get.
320 kilobits per second.
Correct. And to me, it sounds really good. And one thing I've noticed is that what you lose by compressing the audio, mm-hmm. the loss, what you lose sort of gets made up by the intimacy and the way it's represented to you, because almost everything I listen to in that format is, with earbuds. So I listen to my iPod pretty much with earbuds all the time.
Like yeah, you don't connect it to your system, although you did with that on-air receiver you just did.
Oh, I do. I hook it up, but that's not my primary way of listening to music. You know, mm-hmm. if I sit down, if I'm at my stereo, I'm probably pulling out a CD and listening to that. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy iPods, and I think, you know, what you lost in audio quality is more than made up by the fact that it's easier to find new music and follow new bands. I mean, a lot of the stuff I listened to was recorded, you know, this year. Okay. It's not, right. not stuff that was recorded 30 years ago, although I listened to that as well, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of new music out there. And, you know, when I was a kid, my first stereo was a cassette player with a single earpiece, you know, that went in one ear, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And, you know, it was all about the music to me. It always was. So mm-hmm. I can enjoy music coming out of a nightstand, out of MP3. And the fact that, you know, Apple, for all the grief they get, has brought people a lot closer to music. And they've come out with a system that's just iTunes, which is just an amazing way to find music and download it, remunerate the artist, you know, because you're buying it. And I buy my music.
Good for you.
It's 99 cents. Come on. You know, what are you going to get? Cheeseburger at McDonald's, you know, and the music is better for you. Right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, artists deserve to get paid.
I agree with you 100% on that. Absolutely. Now, you know, DRM is important to allow them to get paid, but sometimes it's taken a little too far. Have you ever come across DRM that frustrations that kind of made you throw the iPod against the wall?
I have not yet, but I still have one more computer left that Apple will recognize before I run into a problem. And I don't know what's good. I have a question for the listeners out there. What do you do when you're on your sixth computer and the first five are already broken or sold and you can't log on to them to invalidate them? I guess I should have thought ahead, right?
Yeah. Certainly, if you only have, I think, does iTunes give you three computers? I think it does.
Five.
So five of them. Okay. So you have to then, decertify the one that you're not going to use anymore in order to, somebody just put in the chat room. It's easy to undo all of your computers. So maybe it would be easy to do that. Nice. I honestly don't know.
All right. Well, I will Google that.
Okay.
And
good.
I'll figure that out right when I get my sixth computer.
deauthorize. Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Deauthorize. Yeah.
Very good.
So, but they have a brilliant system, and I absolutely love what Apple's done. I mean, they brought me closer to music than, you know, in the 90s. I kind of lost interest in a lot of music. You know, it's in the last 3-4 years that I've been using my iPod that I've really got involved with my music again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One could also say the same thing about, I've heard other people say the same thing about satellite radio and more recently internet radio, such as the one you mentioned earlier. If you call up a genre, then you'll be exposed to a lot of music you have maybe haven't heard before, but in a genre that you like.
Right. I agree. One of my favorite internet radio stations is in a city that I've never spent more than an hour in, Atlanta. Although I guess mm-hmm. I'm going to be spending a lot of time in it in a week or so.
Oh, we go. You going to Cedia?
I am. Yeah. So
excellent.
Yeah, there's a great rock station, alternate rock station down there, 99X, I think it's called, or something like that. And you can get it on your computer. And I was able to pick it up on the Onkyo too. And they just play great music all the time. And yeah, internet radio has been fantastic. I'll put it on. We have an alternate rock station in Connecticut, but it's it's pretty horrible, really. I mean, they'll play some new songs, but generally by the time they're playing a song, I've already heard it 6 months ago on satellite radio. So they're not really quick with it, and they keep going back and playing some really horrible old stuff too, like Beastie Boys.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, I know that you go back a long way with audio, and I guess you might,
Scott.
What's that?
Not that long, Scott.
Not that long. Okay. But I wanted to ask you. You must have some experience with tube electronics versus solid state, and I wanted to know what you thought about that little debate.
Yeah, I used to really be into tube electronics. One of the best systems I had in my house was VTL monoblock amplifiers driving Martin Logan Request speakers, and I just, no subwoofer. I don't remember what I was using for a preamp at the time. But it might have been an audio research hybrid, which was part solid state, part tube. And I just got phenomenal sound out of it. And, you know, this whole thing about the warm sound of tubes.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that it was warm. It was that there was, I don't know if you remember the old saying, more there.
Yes.
Well, there was definitely more there with tubes. At least that's the way it seemed. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was lost. You know, nobody makes tube equipment for home theater because it would just be too hot and too expensive and too much maintenance. But I always wondered, you know, how cool that might sound, you know, if somebody did. So, yeah,
I like I've started profiling some tube monoblocks on Ultimate AV in the hopes that maybe they might be used, you know, one per speaker in a home theater system. But I do agree with you. It would be a lot of maintenance. You'd have to replace the tubes now and again. They are delicate, certainly, and pretty expensive generally.
Right. I've always been blown away by, like, the Bat avant-garde setups that we've seen at the shows, you know, where they have these huge horns.
Oh, yeah.
Super efficient, and then they're being driven by these high-powered tube amps, and they just sounded amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Really great sound.
We'll probably see and hear some of that in Atlanta next week. Hey, I'm glad you're coming down to Atlanta. I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was kind of like a last-minute decision. And I said, you know what? I missed it last year, and I heard it was a little messy last year, but they've moved everything into Hall B now.
Yes.
So it should be pretty good.
It should be great. It should be great. Well, thank you, Fred, so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Wow, an hour went fast. Thanks, Scott.
An hour goes very fast on this show. That's right. You can see and read Fred's work on HomeTheaterMag.com and in Home Theater Magazine, available on newsstands everywhere and certainly by subscription. My online homes are UltimateAVMag.com and HomeTheaterMag.com. And you can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at HTGeekScott. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Bob Farinelli, CTO of Elan, one of the premier suppliers of whole home AV distribution systems. And since that will be the Monday before I leave for CEDIA, the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association show in Atlanta, which Fred and I were just talking about, I thought it would be appropriate to have him on to talk about the whole issue of distributing audio and video throughout the home. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I sure hope that you tune in. Until then, geek out.